Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on January 8th, 2021 from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at the unprecedented assault on our democracy, a first-hand account from Congressman Jim Clyburn on the Capitol siege. Senator Lindsey Graham called President Trump's actions the problem, but stopped short of supporting calls for his removal from office, as Democrats and several Republicans have. Political science professor Scott Huffman gives us his take on the extraordinary day and what it means for our future. We also have the latest from DHEC, and the state breaks a disturbing new record. Hopefully you continue to listen to this episode after that introduction. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times, even more so now. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. And specifically, maybe tell us about your thoughts on the events that unfolded this week. If you're willing to share, it's something we all experienced together for the most part. So let us know how you thought things worked out and how they continue to play out at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 5,217 confirmed deaths, and currently there are 315,353 confirmed cases being reported in all 46 counties as of January 8th at 4 p.m. On Friday, we saw our highest daily confirmed case count of 4,986. Add in the probable cases, and you're over 5,000. Not good. Our percent positive rate is 31.8%. Now, this is down from our high of 34.1%, but still off the charts. It's not good. There are 2,396 South Carolinians hospitalized, 488 are in intensive care, and 251 are on ventilators. So these numbers are still very high, very shocking, and we need to continue to work to bring them down. Just wear your mask, folks, socially distance, stay home, you don't have to go out. On January 6, we saw an insurrection in our nation's capital when a mob laid siege to the U.S. Capitol, threatening the lives of our elected officials in an unprecedented manner. Some of these insurrectionists were armed, and two pipe bombs were found on Capitol Hill. Insurrectionists bypassed security perimeters and entered the Capitol by force in an extraordinary failure of security, creating a major national security breach. Now, let me stop here and just tell you that this does not happen in our country. This is not supposed to happen in America by our own people. This was not a revolution. Revolutions are actually successful. This was a rebellion by a mob incited by the commander-in-chief and his enablers just moments before the legislative branch was intimidated from doing its constitutional duty of counting and certifying the free and fair election results of November 3rd. We're going to hear from two South Carolina leaders in a moment, but first, here is how Winthrop University political science professor Scott Huffman described the moments we witnessed on Wednesday.
A domestic terrorist attack, quite literally. If you look up the U.S. code and the definition of domestic terrorism, this was quite literally it. I have to say, I was shocked and scared like everybody else. I had always had the belief that, you know, it's the U.S. Capitol. It's the leaders of the free world are in there. There's no way that, you know, it's going to be breached by, you know, a bunch of terrorists, much less a bunch of Al-Qaeda terrorists. So, I was just absolutely shocked when they got in there and quite literally threatened the lives of, you know, my representatives. And so, you know, just like everybody else, I think I'm disgusted.
I later asked Huffman if this was a coup attempt. He said not technically, because it wasn't state-sponsored, rather just presidentially encouraged. Can't believe I had to ask him for clarification on whether the United States of America witnessed a coup. You can watch that full interview on This Week in South Carolina. But continuing on, Senator Lindsey Graham also called these attacks domestic terrorism during a briefing on Thursday. Graham, a longtime ally of the president, refused to call for his ousting, but said that his actions were the problem. He made these remarks after he spoke on the Senate floor Wednesday evening, saying he was done with the attempts to try and intervene in the election, while calling on his fellow Republicans to do the same.
Why am I worried? It would have been so easy for a terrorist organization to infiltrate this movement. The lone wolf terrorist, I think we've got a pretty good grip on. But political protest in this country is the heart and soul of who we are. When it comes to accountability, the president needs to understand that his actions were the problem, not the solution. That the rally yesterday was unseemly, it got out of hand, and a good friend of mine, Rudy Giuliani, did not help. I said on the floor of the Senate, I cast my vote accordingly, that Joe Biden is the legitimate president-elect of the United States. Are there irregularities in this election? Yes, I'm sure they are. Have they been overblown? Absolutely. There's been a constant effort by people from the president's legal team to provide misinformation, to distort the facts, to make accusations that cannot be proven. That needs to stop. As to the 25th Amendment being invoked, I do not believe that's appropriate at this point. I'm looking for a peaceful transfer of power. I'm looking for the next 14 days to reset, and we will hand off power in a traditional sense by being a peaceful transfer.
Not all the Republicans removed their objections to the Arizona and Pennsylvania results, including five members of the South Carolina House delegation: Jeff Duncan, William Timmons, Joe Wilson, Tom Rice, and Ralph Norman. They all voted to object just hours after a mob incited by the president, who has made false claims about the election he lost, stormed the very building they were in. More than a day after what he called a heinous attack on the U.S. Capitol, President Donald Trump condemned the actions of his supporters in a televised Thursday evening address as he sought to put the genie back in the bottle.
Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem. I immediately deployed the National Guard and federal law enforcement to secure the building and expel the intruders. America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay. We have just been through an intense election and emotions are high, but now tempers must be cooled and calm restored. We must get on with the business of America. My campaign vigorously pursued every legal avenue to contest the election results. My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote. In so doing, I was fighting to defend American democracy. I continue to strongly believe that we must reform our election laws to verify the identity and eligibility of all voters and to ensure faith and confidence in all future elections. Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power.
The president was reading from a teleprompter and made such claims that he immediately called for National Guard troops to intervene. Reporting from top news outlets cite Vice President Mike Pence making that call, as well as a firsthand account from Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, who was forced to wait for hours to send in National Guard troops. It was one of several moves House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called seditious and in clear violation of Trump's sworn oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. Pelosi said Friday afternoon that if the president does not resign immediately, a la Richard Nixon, that Congress would move forward with articles of impeachment over his role of inciting a mob. House Whip Jim Clyburn told reporters Friday morning that even military leaders were being consulted by House leadership over Trump's stability.
This guy, if you look at the speeches he's made in the last couple of weeks, what he said that led to this insurrection, it's no telling what he would say or what he would do to imperil this country. And I know for a fact their military leaders are having discussions as we speak about how to respond to what may be some foolishness by this president.
The New York Times reported Friday that Pelosi spoke with General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, about, quote, preventing an unstable president from initiating military hostilities or accessing the launch codes, quote. Remember, it was only Sunday when Trump reversed Defense Secretary Chris Miller's decision and ordered the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz back to the Middle East due to Iranian threats. Tensions remain high, but here's a reassuring note from the Associated Press. While the president has sole authority in the U.S. government to order the launch of a nuclear weapon, if a military commander were to determine, on advice of his lawyers, that such an order was illegal, then the order could be refused. It would be illegal to launch a nuclear attack for no reason or as a disproportionate response to a military provocation. So that's a good thing. But let's continue our look at Wednesday's glaring national security breach at the U.S. Capitol, where Congressman Jim Clyburn was one of 11 Democrats on the House floor by 12:50 p.m., socially distanced from Majority Leader Steny Hoyer for the joint session of Congress. Now, Clyburn knew it was going to be a day of fireworks, especially when several Republican colleagues in the House didn't don masks or follow social distancing protocols amid the ongoing pandemic that has claimed the lives of 20,000 Americans in the first week of 2021 alone. While the debate over the objection to Arizona's Electoral College votes got underway in the House and Senate, Clyburn recalls what happens next, shortly after 2 p.m., when the Capitol was breached.
And all of a sudden, I saw the speaker leaving the podium, and I knew that was something was wrong with that because we had asked her to consider not presiding at all, but she said she was going to carry out her duties and responsibilities, and she was going to preside no matter how long it took. So when I saw them moving her, and all of a sudden, Jim McGovern going to the seat to take her seat, I looked to see where she was going, and I looked right into the face of the young lady who happens to be a native of South Carolina and who is one of the supervisors of my security team. She looked at me and beckoned for me to come to her. And I went over and I saw the look on her face, and I touched Steny Hoyer on his shoulder. I said, "Steny, something's up. We need to get out of here." And I walked over to her. They took me down some places that I did not know exist in the Capitol and out in an area where that I was familiar with, and out to a waiting automobile, well, I called it my truck, and they whisked me away to an undisclosed location. Now, when I got in the truck, she asked me, she said, "The building has been breached. Do you want to go home or do you want to go to the undisclosed location?" I said, "Take me home." And we started out, after about two blocks, she turned to me and says, "We can't take you home. We got to take you to this undisclosed location." And so they took me to that location, and I got there, and my truck pulled up at the same time Nancy Pelosi's truck pulled up. A little bit later, Steny Hoyer showed up. Then they moved the Democratic leadership into one area of this location and the Republican leadership in the other. But let me hasten to add, there were interactions between both leaders. And I got to say this, some of my friends will get upset with me, but Mitch McConnell was great. And we worked together, not just to make that visit a good visit, but to put in place getting back to the Capitol and getting back to the business at hand to ensure a peaceful transfer. We were there for 4 or 5 hours. And after some back and forth, we then went back to the Capitol.
Clyburn says that during this time, he didn't even speak to his daughters, much to their frustration, and that the leadership of the Capitol Police seemed to be telling leadership what they wanted to hear instead of what was actually happening, something he told Pelosi about. The next day, under pressure from Clyburn, Pelosi, and others, the U.S. Capitol Police Chief, Stephen Sund, resigned. The Associated Press reports that Sund turned down federal assistance 3 days prior to the attack, and even during the siege. Clyburn said he thought for sure there would be a police presence similar to the Black Lives Matter protest last year, but there wasn't. The acting U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, Michael Sherwin, told the Associated Press that the failure to arrest more people is making law enforcement's response more difficult, since they will now have to go through cell site data, collect video footage to identify and charge people, and then arrest them. Known faces in the crowd included infamous white supremacists and conspiracy theorists, as well as some state lawmakers. The man who put his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk has already been arrested in Arkansas. When I asked newly sworn-in Congressman Nancy Mace about the right-wing theories that Antifa was involved in the siege, as many Republicans are now claiming, despite clear evidence to the contrary, and no mention of other actors by the president who called the insurrectionists special and that he loves them, this is what she had to say.
Show me the evidence that it was Antifa. I've seen video. I mean, I don't think you make that determination that soon. If you're going to make that claim, you better damn well back it up with evidence.
So where does this leave us as a country? Do we have further to go in our race to the bottom of democracy? Can it possibly get any worse? Scott Huffman says, definitely.
Right. And, you know, just very well-known Trump supporters, very well-known people in the QAnon movement, the protest movement. And so, as you pointed out, people then turning around, seeing these absolutely identified right-wing figures and then saying, oh, it was, you know, Antifa. No, we haven't reached bottom. You know, every time we think we've found one, we find a new Marianas Trench of depravity against our political institutions. So, you know, I'm sorry, but the answer to that one's no. There will always be a coterie of these folks that, when our elected officials are delegitimizing our formal democratic institutions, then absolutely there's going to be a group that sees it as their constitutional right. Now, mind you, pretty much none of those people could actually pass a quiz on the Constitution in my intro American government class, but they interpret it as their constitutional prerogative to tear down legitimate democratic institutions. No, we're not at the bottom.
So, an absolutely extraordinary week, with ramifications we have still yet to fully comprehend. We've seen two cabinet secretaries resign, Elaine Chao of Transportation and Betsy DeVos over Education, as well as Mick Mulvaney, our former congressman and White House chief of staff, turned special envoy to Northern Ireland. But as we leave this section, I'm still gripped by those disturbing still images of House guards with guns drawn in the chamber, a man walking through the halls of Congress with a flag of the Confederacy, people ransacking offices and sowing chaos in the most hallowed halls of our democracy. These images will outlive us all. Images brought to you by hardworking journalists, I might add. Some will say this insurrection wasn't a big deal. To be objectively blunt, it is. One woman was shot by officers, and three others died from other causes. A Capitol Police officer died from his injuries, and other officers were injured. My own brother with Metro Transit Police and his fellow officers were dispatched to help secure the complex that day. January 6 was the closest I have felt to 9/11, and that was 20 years ago when I was a sophomore in high school in Washington when foreign terrorists attacked our homeland. Foreign terrorists, not domestic. What we lived through Wednesday was a disturbing day for our democracy that never should have happened. So we skipped our business section because we had a long little political section there talking about, again, the insurrection that we all witnessed this week. So I do want to keep you up to date on what's going on with the vaccine rollout and everything COVID in our state. So I heard from Dr. Brandon Traxler, the interim public health director at DHEC, and she said the agency has seen an increase in the number of folks in phase 1A wanting to get vaccinated now that there is a January 5th deadline that is rapidly approaching. But she opened her remarks Friday, pointing out the grim record case numbers in our state.
5,077 new cases, 4,986 confirmed, and 91 probable. This is the highest number of daily cases that we've reported thus far in South Carolina. I understand that the talk of the hour is vaccines, but I feel compelled to take time today to reiterate that people are continuing to die from COVID-19 every day. People are sick, people are hospitalized, and people are suffering and dying from this virus as we speak. Our hospitals are overwhelmed.
DHEC announced that South Carolina hospitals should begin to vaccinate their admitted patients who are 65 years or older, as long as they do not currently have COVID-19 and a provider feels that it is appropriate for them.
Adding admitted patients 65 years and older to the phase 1A eligible individuals that are currently able to receive the vaccine is part of the DHEC effort to speed up the number of South Carolinians who are getting vaccinated against COVID-19. We continue to make great strides and progress in our vaccination efforts here in South Carolina and across the country.
CNN reports that President-elect Joe Biden will aim to release nearly every available dose of the coronavirus vaccine when he takes office, a break with the Trump administration's strategy of holding back half the U.S. vaccine production to ensure a second dose is available. The state has a capacity to store 2 million doses of vaccine, according to DHEC. As for when we'll be able to transition to phase 1B, Dr. Traxler said it's still dependent on a variety of factors.
We're going to be looking at, it's rather than even one particular set of numbers that day, we're going to be trending the numbers in terms of vaccine appointment uptake. We're working with the hospitals and with the hospital association to look at that information to see how many appointments are being scheduled, how many appointments are available each day, and basically the rate at which those appointments are being filled, as well as a number of available vaccines each hospital has on hand and what each of those data points are trending at in terms of whether we feel that opening it up to the next group, the phase 1B, would be the thing to do. And so we'll be talking with a lot of our partners and to make that decision. And we'll be working with the governor's office, the hospital association, and hospitals, as well as other partners in the state to make that decision as a state.
And just some more information about how the state is trying to expedite this vaccine rollout. The South Carolina National Guard is now also helping with vaccination efforts. So some good news there. And I want to clarify the phases again so you have an idea about who is where. Phase 1B includes people 75 or older and frontline essential workers. Phase 1C, which will happen later this spring, includes essential workers, those 65 and older, and those under 64 with health conditions. Phase 2 is everybody, and that's projected to start in the late spring. Also, stay tuned for Tuesday's pod as we give you the latest about what to expect this coming legislative session that begins on Tuesday, and what also to expect when we hear from the governor in his upcoming State of the State address. Welcome to our wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic and want to hear your stories as well. Tell us how you're handling things. If you've been tested, how that's been going, if you're positive, just how the new year's going, what are the resolutions looking like, any progress? I know it's been only a couple days. You can tell us, 803-563-7169. We'll keep your secret, but tell us who you are, where you're calling from. And a little bit about what's going on in your world at 803-563-7169. AT, do we have any calls? Any international calls?
We don't have any international callers. No one. Looking at you, Roman. So we have no calls for today. And I think that's okay because today, instead of a wind down, we got a little bit of a wind up still. Or at least we're maintaining, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maintain your shot nerves for the week.
Yeah. 2021 has started off with a bang, Gavin. Can we agree on that?
Yeah. What did I see? Nuts. Someone have a meme that said, "I've experienced the 7-day trial and I'd like to return it now."
Like my money back. One. It was like very funny. December 37th.
We're talking in memes because that's our future.
That's how we cope with our huge existential crises.
Smiley face emoji, laugh emoji.
So, Gavin, how was your day on Wednesday? Let's talk about this.
I was working on I was in my office. I was working on putting together the show for This Week in South Carolina, which was originally going to be Myon Schechter and Jeffrey Collins talking about the legislative preview. That's what we typically do the first week back for TWSC.
Yeah, of course.
And that slowly dissolved as events started ramping up in D.C. And I was like, I texted my producer, Amy. I'm like, things are going to have to change tomorrow. So, and she's like, yeah, definitely. Of course. Like, this is unprecedented. And, you know, so we flipped all that. We decided to get Scott Huffman from Winthrop on, and then also Nancy Mace, who was just really just on the media circuit.
She hit everything.
She had two hours of sleep, and in between that, like, she was on the radio, on TV. Like, she was interviewing with everybody, just putting her message out there. So we managed to catch up with her. So that was on the show if you watched it last night. It's also on Sunday morning or on YouTube. But, I was just watching all that play out basically on Twitter. And then watching the PBS NewsHour, basically, because I don't
Twitter
have cable.
It was just the day of Twitter on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what Twitter is for.
From my seat, you know, you're just like clued, and you're like terrified to get up and get something to drink or go to the bathroom because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that was the biggest thing about Wednesday. It's like everyone's like, oh, no big deal. They were just going to the people's house. It's like, well, that federal building is technically supposed to be secured.
That's supposed to be one of the most secure buildings in the world.
And I don't know what the people are bringing into the people's house or what they took or what they left behind. I mean, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you know, like Jim Clyburn, I didn't mention this, but he had his iPad is missing from his office. Like, so basically we can say it's stolen. His staff had to barricade their door. I mean, this happened to staff all over. I mean, he was escorted out, but his staff was behind, you know, it's like, and you didn't know if they were going to bring a bomb, and that's why I was just so blown away by the fact that
I can't believe that they got all the guns and everything in there. That was crazy. Yeah. And I mean, I have not had a news day like that in my adult life. I mean, yeah. I thought the election was a big news day for me, but man, oh man, Wednesday I was mainlining. I felt like you.
I mean, we've had those days like, you know, impeachment. We've had other days. I mean, everything blurs together. You kind of forget all the insanity that's been going on.
There are times that you could check out of those a little bit.
This was
uncheckoutable.
Yeah, you were glued in for multiple hours there because it was just from 2 to like at least 6 that it was just what is happening right here.
I really think your analogy to 9/11 earlier in the show is very apt because not that there was as much death or anything on Wednesday, but it was a national event. It was an event that our whole nation and the whole world lived live time together.
When I talked to Scott about that too, and it's like that feeling of helplessness, you know, you're seeing things happen, and that's what makes it even worse with that breach is that we're in the post 9/11 era. I know we're 20 years deep, and Clyburn mentioned this that, you know, not in the podcast, but he's like, I think some people are getting lax, but then you contrast that with other events in which you see this, you know, militaristic force out there to protect all these federal buildings and other and property. And it's just hard to kind of mesh the two. And that's going to be the debate going forward as we continue to comprehend all this. But, you know, just like on 9/11, where you might have thought that a terrorist could have done that, but never in a coordinated way like that. And then that changed things. And now I'm sure it's going to be even harder to get on the Capitol grounds than it already was. I mean, you heard people talking about just how difficult it always was. You know, you get yelled at for walking across the street the wrong way or getting
blocks
too close
away
to the building. And then you just, I mean, it's just...
They just walked right up. They sauntered right in there. That was crazy to me. And I really think that it was a rude awakening.
Of course. Yeah, and you're outnumbered, of course, so there's only so much you can do. But you would think that there would be more. I mean, you'd think you'd go down with the ship fighting or something like that, and you just didn't see that. So
no, I think it was a rude awakening also for, I mean, I've joked about it here before, QAnon, but like if anyone cared to listen, they were telling everyone that they were going to do this for a really, really long time.
And, you know, police, law enforcement, they look at open source data, they can find it. It's sometimes they just
NSA,
and we saw them live streaming this stuff, so it's out there, you know.
It was crazy to me, and especially like I saw a guy with a shirt that he made for it, and it was called it said Civil War January 6, 2020. I'm like,
they had shirts.
There were employees
that's
at
planning.
Kinko's that knew this was gonna happen,
and it just like, you know, everyone's like, well, that's not that big of a deal. It's like, but that's the premise that it could have been such a bigger deal. You heard Lindsey Graham talking about that, like, if these people were armed, and you don't know, I mean, there was definitely foreign actors in there. If you're a spy in the United States, if you weren't there that day, then you're not a good spy. I mean, like,
they blew it. Yeah.
You could get into the inner sanctum of our country.
Lazy and plant spy. Something,
steal things. I mean, they were in Nancy Pelosi's office. I mean, it's mind boggling when you think about that. I saw a computer security expert saying like all the hardware in the Capitol should be replaced.
Yes. You know, they need to get rid of it.
Everything needs to be, I mean, just replace it because it's so insecure. We already saw that huge data breach, you know, weeks ago. Now we have this,
and it was hard. Like, I guarantee you all those guys that worked hours and hours and hours on
the Russians
hack
are
were
so
like,
pissed
oh,
that
come
like
on.
Now they
could just
saunter in.
Yeah.
Like
I think one thing we do need to say to give props to our PBS NPR overlords.
Oh my
was,
god, yes.
While we were mainlining Twitter and national news the whole time, it was a breath of fresh air to watch Judy and Lisa.
Journalism, I mean, goddesses, yes.
It was absolutely fabulous to find. I mean, I was breathlessly flipping between Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, mm-hmm. BBC, looking at Twitter and doing all this stuff, texting my friends and reacting. Yeah. And then to finally see these adults in the room just mm-hmm. calmly tell you these things. It was, I mean, you were saying Lisa Desjardins was under threat.
Yeah, and she was in there with the protesters. She was on her phone, like on camera, and you're just like terrified for her because you just have no idea what's going on. She's crouching behind a security desk.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, security finally shows up and you can see the light go on her face and it's probably attached to the end of their rifle. And she's like, no, I'm pressed. And then they like help escort her out. And you see these people face down on the ground with guards standing over them. And you're just like,
insane.
Okay, well, this is good to see for once, but just absolutely insane. But that's again, the you know, that's what you want. In a crisis situation like that, you want to have these people who are telling you the news. It's already
professionals.
It's already very explosive news. So you're already reacting to it. You don't need them to add more intensity
to it.
They
didn't at all. They just laid it out. And I really felt like I was breathing for the first time watching our coverage.
And
I was
even
like,
Lisa, who was
God.
There, and like, you're just like, she's just like telling it straight.
It was fabulous.
And so PBS,
it's
free. It's on your TV.
Like, Meg and Jamie and everyone, all our friends from the pod, they were doing a great job too. I saw an endless thread from Meg that started with Trump speaking and was ending with four dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, we've traveled a very long way.
Yeah. Oh, and then you think of Judy. I mean, she was anchoring that for 10 hours.
I mean,
I think she took like an hour break before the news hour went live at 6, but like, it's so taxing, and it's not like she gets to watch Twitter the whole time because she's just reacting to what people are telling her and then making it work and doing it completely calm. It's
amazing.
It's a lot of
Judy,
work that people did that
big
day.
Ups.
And all the other journalists out there who told the story, that's what they do, folks. Especially
fabulous
as they're getting attacked, especially as
I know.
People are trashing
under
their
attack.
Equipment.
That was crazy to me. What were they looking to accomplish there?
Just,
you know,
just anarchy.
I hated that.
So
take it out. I hope anyone
could
have relaxed.
We didn't stress you out too much, but you know, we've made it through another another low in our country. So we're going to keep going, hopefully up one of these days. So continue to keep listening to the pod because we'll be here for you throughout it, thick and thin. And you can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on iTunes or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. You can stay up to date with the latest news on a new and improved SCETV.org. Folks, check it out. And SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget your local newspapers. They're out there hustling too. You probably saw some gripping front pages this past week. I know I did. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40. And if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support, like PBS NewsHour. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Hello and welcome to the South Carolina. I'm not even motivated.
You were just
that was like the lowest T start I've ever had. Yeah.
That was low T.
That was bad. I apologize. I had some low.
Go get
I couldn't hear
Nugenics.
Myself.
Go get your Nugenics.
Hold on, I got it in vape form, bro.